everybody, and welcome to episode 129 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who is helping the ballot workers in Michigan copy all of those votes, Brian. Brian, welcome back. How are you this week, my friend?
I'm doing fine. I want to say that I really do appreciate the supportive text messages that you've sent to me throughout the past 48 hours. We have been doing a lot of fraudulent work here up in Michigan. I'm right now in the upper part, the upper peninsula, as we like to call it, just literally churning and burning Biden ballots left and right. It's been some busy work, but this is for it's for the health of our country.
All right. Well, obviously, elections are the big topic. If you missed the show on election night, you can always catch that on our YouTube channel. And as always, for all things Ron and Brian, visit ronandbrianpodcast.com. Links to all of our podcast channels, as well as our Patreon, if you would like to become a subscriber, which will give you access to the After Dark special, which happens right after the main show. But in the meantime, Brian, I don't know about you, I could use a drink.
Drink of the week.
La zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Slanche.
Who's?
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
So I think we both drank a tad bit heavily on Tuesday night for the election. I had a recovery day yesterday, and now we are back at it. So, Brian, what are you bringing to the table to drink this evening?
Macallan 12, double cask.
Nice.
I'm going with the fancy stuff. I figured today we would be celebrating our 46th president, so I'm starting early. Look at that color. Look at that beautiful amber haze.
Nice. And I already know it's that you like it. It's going to go down easy. Brian, I'm excited. You know I love Halloween, but Halloween has passed us. We are now clearly into the fall and winter season, and that can only mean one thing, that our good friends at Trogues Brewery come out with Mad Elf. Yes, they're ale brewed with honey and cherries. It comes out once a year. It clocks in at a beefy 11%. I am not bougie. They actually recommend that you drink this from a chalice. I have had many a wasted night on this, and this will be one of many.
Now, my question to you is, why the chalice? Why the chalice?
You know, it's a beer thing. I think because of the complexities, the notes on the nose, they recommend a chalice. And listen, I look pretty damn good drinking out of a chalice.
First off, you look pretty good to begin with. The pinky sticking out, I would have to question a little bit, slightly. But I'm going to tell you something. You are a fancy kid, and it's frankly, it's why we love you.
Is that why? I mean, I got the haircut today, too. I know you didn't think I needed one, but every month, whether I need it or not, religiously, going to get the haircut.
I'm still waiting for a hint of gray to come on your head. I don't see it.
I am blessed. You know, I get my my hair color and my complexion from my mother's side of the family. She is almost 78 years old. God bless her. Not a gray hair on her head. So I'm very lucky. I mean, I got this thing going on right here where the hairline is retreating. But other than that, just lush.
Have you thought about going bald?
I don't feel I have a good cranium. I don't know why, because I've never had my head shaved. But I feel like there's a lot going on there. Where you remember really? That powder? Like I feel like he had a good cranium. I just feel I would be just pale and scary looking, like the kind of guy that people look at on the street and are like, "We need to cross the street. This guy is probably rife with diseases."
I think that you would be, and if you did the standard goatee with the bald head, I think you know. We need to update the website photo.
But you've seen how poorly the whole beard grows in. We tried that during the beginning of the pandemic. And you see, that's where the gray is. It doesn't connect.
I thought there was the connecting, but we're just asking for a mustache and a little soul patch down here.
A little flavor saver. All right. We'll play around with it. We'll see what happens. Brian, let's get to racism.
This week.
Racism.
So not as many stories as usual. Don't worry, folks. Our country is still amazingly racist. It was just less covered this week because I think the election pushed a lot of it out of the front pages. But let's go out to the West Coast, to Tiburon, California, where a social media post threatened to raid the only black business in town if Joe Biden wins. Yema Khalif and Howie Awash, immigrants from Kenya, were made aware of the Instagram post from a now deactivated account. Khalif, Awash, and their store made news back in August when Tiburon police questioned them while working late in their store one night. Police apparently did not believe they owned the store and would not believe that until a white neighbor vouched for them. Good job, California. And we actually have a threefer for state police racism this week. Starting in Revere, Massachusetts, a rookie state trooper was fired for using a racial slur during an off-duty confrontation. The trooper, who has not been identified, approached a man in a parked car when the incident occurred. The Massachusetts State Police did not describe what was said, only referring to it as, quote, unacceptable conduct while announcing his termination. Going down to Louisiana, a public records request by David Lancer, a civil rights attorney in New Orleans, showed the pervasive use of derogatory anti-black language by state police in a set of emails and audio recordings. In one incident, you're going to love this, Brian, a white trooper named Gus McKay, which is a very white name, was at his dinner table when he called a black cop he worked with the N-word, which was recorded by his Apple Watch and texted to the officer he was talking about.
No.
McKay's defense was that his comment, quote, wasn't supposed to get out. The Baton Rouge branch of the NAACP is now calling upon the Justice Department to launch a civil rights investigation into the Louisiana State Police.
Okay, reasonable.
Yeah, and Kentucky, again, always shocking when we see racism in Kentucky, but state police were found to have quoted both Adolf Hitler and Confederate General Robert E. Lee in a cadet training program. The 33-page slideshow was first reported upon by Manuel Red Eye, a student newspaper at Louisville's DuPont Manual High School, which was provided to them by a local lawyer who received them from an open records request for a lawsuit against the police agency. Quote, the very first essential for success is a perpetually constant and regular employment of violence, which is what Hitler wrote in his anti-Semitic manifesto, Mein Kampf. It was also included in this presentation on a training slide titled Violence of Action. The Anti-Defamation League has announced that they are getting involved in the case, and the Kentucky State Police Commissioner, Rodney Brewer, announced his resignation soon after the report was made public. Shocking the continuing amount of racism we see in some police departments.
Yeah, I'm also wondering whether it's just, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that there are not tons of races, but there's still a part of me that thinks that a lot of it is because there is more of a spotlight on racism in America than there was, say, 2 years ago when we started this bit on the podcast.
Okay. I'm not quite sure where you're going with that, but you're saying it's not more prevalent, just more visible.
I'm saying that it's more visible.
All right. There you go. We do.
No. I'm saying I don't know if it's more prevalent, but it's definitely more visible.
All right. I'm with you there. All right. Let's hit a little racism rewind.
Racism rewind.
And last week we discussed how on Election Day, Alabama voters were going to be voting on a referendum to remove racist language from their state constitution. This was the third try with it having been voted down twice before. Finally, Alabama gets it right. The measure passed with roughly 67% of the vote. However, to put that into perspective, over 585,000 residents voted to leave the racist language in the Constitution. But the measure passed, at least. So there is that. And also, just on a side note, Mississippi voters approved a new version of their state flag, which will remove the Confederate flag imagery. The new flag, entitled the New Magnolia, received 68% of the vote.
I saw that.
You did
see that. Kudos to Mississippi. You are now only mildly less racist.
Very nice. Very nice. And I think before we get to our interview, I think we do have some time to discuss our beefs of the week. Are you ready for this, Brian?
I am ready.
All right.
Ron and Brian's beef of the week.
All right, Brian, what's bothering you this week?
The asshole that was in the elevator when I went to the dentist on Monday.
In your building or in the dentist building?
In the dentist building.
And why was he an asshole?
I've gone to the dentist a couple times recently. Apparently, since the last time I went, they instituted a capacity elevator policy that they are now limiting the number of people that can be in an elevator at any given time.
As they should.
It's a very small elevator. I'm not going to lie to you.
Right.
So I get to the building and I see the sign and I said, hey, I know they're putting a capacity on the elevators. It's about time. Nothing. It's exactly what you just said. Anyway, moving on. So I go up to the dentist. I come out. Elevator door opens. I see two people in the elevator. I am pretty sure that the sign said three people are allowed in the elevator, maximum. Okay. So I walk in the elevator, minding my own business, because I'm a New Yorker. I mind my business. That's what we do in New York. We mind our business.
It's a lifestyle.
So I take out my phone. I put my head down. I just start tapping away. There was a young woman in the elevator. I would say that she worked in some type of medical practice based on her garb. It was an embarrassing design on top of a white print. Gross. And I would describe, a man in his mid-40s, around my age, looked at me when I got on and said, oh, so I guess we're not following the capacity. And I looked at him and I said, oh, I'm sorry. Am I doing something wrong? And he goes, the capacity is two. And I said, really? Oh, I said, I did not realize that. I would not have gotten on otherwise. I made a point of not apologizing.
Okay.
I said everything but apologizing. And I said, oh, I did not realize. Terribly sorry. No, I didn't say terribly sorry. I said I was apologizing in my head, not coming out with it. Suddenly, the door opens. I turn around. I look at the sign, and it says capacity of three.
I understand.
Looked at him.
Rage was there.
Oh, literally, I just saw red. So I turned, looked at him as he starts getting out of the bed, and I said, "Oh, look, it says three people." Turned around. Walked off triumphantly. The last time that I hit somebody with a triumphant one-liner, turned around and walked away, I got a steak knife in the back.
Yeah, sure.
But I risked it again.
Not worth it. All right.
So I said, oh, look, the sign says three people. I turned and walked away. And this guy goes, well, at least you can count.
Listen, it's New York. No one wants to let the last word go. It's just how.
And I couldn't let him have the last word. So as I was walking away, I responded by being like, you have a blessed day. Because that annoys the shit out of me when somebody says, have a blessed day.
Your heart. My beef this week, Brian, and thankfully it's now over for a little bit, election ads. Again, you see them a lot. You're just inundated with them, even more so. Since Pennsylvania was a battleground state. But I mean, it's not even just on the TV now. Like I play like games on my phone, and even the ads, because I'm not gonna spend money to get the ad free game. I'm gonna sit there and watch the 30-second ad. But it's also ads for people that I couldn't even vote for if I wanted to. Like it's different districts, it's New Jersey ads. But at the end of the day, the more I think about it, is if you decide who you're going to vote for based on election ads, I don't think you should be legally allowed to vote.
Yes.
Because you really should just be researching the candidates. because sure. the ads are, and again, even the ads, whether it was Democrat or Republican, were all lies and mistruths. Like it just crazy. Like, all right, well, this guy is lying about the other person's record, but his opponent, the Democrat, is really lying about her opponent's record. It's like, it's just do some research, folks. That's all I am asking is just do the research. But again,
perfectly understandable. What games on your phone do you play? I never would have pegged you as a phone game person.
A little dice with friends, words with friends. I've been getting into a little learning a little gin rummy lately. Just you know, because I'm an old man, so I got to play a little gin rummy.
Okay, I'm a little hurt that not once have you said, "Hey, let's play against each other."
Well, if there's a game that you have, I will play against you.
No, the game is how many fingers until it hurts, but. I would have downloaded a game to play against you,
okay, I will step over just for you, my friend.
Apparently, you have other friends that you want to play with other than me.
I play with my wife, who gets incredibly frustrated because I beat her often because I have a very sick competitive streak, and I need to get help for it.
Which is the only time you beat her?
Pretty much.
I just want to make sure you don't beat her any other times.
Not at all.
Good.
If anything, she inflicts punishment on me on a daily basis. But yes. I love it. Let's not
verbal, emotional.
Yes. Well, anyway, we are excited. We do have a guest with us this evening who will be joining us in just a moment. Alex Kack, who you may have come to know in last year in a viral clip referred to as the green shirt guy. We've got a quick clip to refresh your memory. He was laughing at some Trump supporters at a meeting he was attending. I never realized before how much that lady sounds like the South Park. They took our germs.
They took our germs.
Anyway, without further ado, let's bring in into the chat Alex Kack. Alex, thank you for joining us here this evening. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And it's important to note, not just a guy who puts on a green shirt and laughs at people who deserve it, but activist, comedian. I've seen you've done some work in the past with Amnesty International, the People's Defense Initiative, and also have been involved in some county attorney and state attorney campaigns.
Yeah. I like to just be. I'm the guy that's there to say that I'm doing something important, and I wind up getting the snacks. But you know, it's something.
Snacks cannot be the importance of snacks cannot be underrated. I don't know if I do. Let me ask something. Do you like a good tortilla chip?
I love a good, I'm not going to pronounce it like that. You saying that out loud just sent a visceral gut reaction.
Thank you.
Into me. I've honestly, it's been an aggravating week and that added to it. Damn it, Ron.
I meant there were many other people I meant to aggravate by pronouncing it that way. I did not intend to aggravate you, but my apologies. You, I will apologize to the other people. They deserve it. So tell us a little bit about some of the work you've been doing out there in Arizona.
I'm a hack. I'm a political hack. I go from one campaign to the next.
So are we. Don't worry about
those ads you were just talking about hating. I help come up with the lies you're talking about for some of those ads. That's what I do professionally from one campaign to the next. This cycle has been really weird. I like to do a lot of the field work. I like to do a lot of the in-person face-to-face stuff. And this cycle kind of took that away from us, which has been really interesting because it, you know, you can't really go to the old folks' home and explain to them why your candidate is better than the other one because you might kill them in the process of doing so.
Right. Which was it frustrating for you, you know, and again, I know it was for us, but we were just more watching it from a high level. What was it frustrating for you to see how fast and loose the GOP seemed to play with people's lives and as far as events and campaign and everything else, while, you know, you and I think a lot of the Democratic Party stuck more to what was the right and safe way.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So, that, you know, there was an article today that was talking about the fact that this wasn't a landslide for Joe Biden, obviously. And we don't even know if he'll win or not yet, but it looks that way. But one of the things that brought up is this article in The Guardian that said, you know, Donald Trump had knocked millions of doors across the country and Joe Biden had knocked zero up to that point. But look, anyone who does like political field work specifically, who, you know, I've run those crews, I trained those people who are like 18, 19 years old to go knock doors and talk to people face to face and go to these events and hold these types of things. Those are in good years and normal years already disease vectors. You already have to account for your staff getting sick constantly. And just in the beginning of this, in the beginning of this year's cycle, from December to February, I got sick three times in the span of 3 months. So yeah, of course Joe Biden hit zero doors because that's a good way to kill your voters and some of your staff members. And we saw that there was a Republican congressional candidate who won in North Dakota, despite the fact that he is dead now from coronavirus. like he died before the election happened. Yeah, because he was, you know, they're playing it fast and loose. That's how fast and loose they're playing it.
If I may ask, how did you see things going in Arizona?
So, I mean, it's, you know, we're not done yet. Let's be perfectly honest. A night ago, we were sitting really pretty. It looked like not only was the state going for Biden and for Kelly, but it looked like we might be flipping the state house in both houses of the state house here as well. That's probably not going to happen now. Some people have withdrawn their prediction for Arizona going for Biden. I think a few, like the AP, are still holding it. Based on the numbers, it looks good for Joe. I mean, it looks like he's going to squeak this out, but it's narrowing, and it's been narrowing quickly. So I'm optimistic about it going for Biden, but it's going to be close.
Yeah. As of right now, CNN, I think, has it at about a 58,000 vote differential with 88% of the vote counted. They were running numbers earlier, and I think Trump would have to capture somewhere in the ballpark of, you know, 54 to 56% of the remaining votes. Which he's averaging 48%. So, yeah, to your point, I think Biden can squeak this out, but it will be close. And then Captain Kelly is up by 113,000. So it feels like, I mean, it feels like he's got a more comfortable edge because I think they calculated McSally would need to pick up 61% of the remaining votes to be counted. And since a lot of those, you know, seem to be in more Democratic districts, you know, again, I mean, I don't know Senator McSally personally, but, you know, it seemed like she didn't win an election. Then she got made senator. But, you know, Mark Kelly just seems like the kind of individual that we need more of in politics.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's get one thing very clear right up front. I think that Mark Kelly ran a very good campaign, but also Martha McSally is just uniquely hated from like across the political spectrum. I have never once in all the time I've been in Arizona organizing and doing politics, like met someone who's like, I love Senator McSally. Even when she was a congresswoman and like squeaked out that election, there was just like a lot of Republicans that are like, ah! Like that's the, that like, right. And yeah, you don't really win elections if like your base is kind of just like, I could take her or leave her. So yeah, and I mean she fell apart. I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch the last debate here, but she was really kind of stuck in that area where she didn't have a base and she knew it, so she tried to kind of play every angle all at once. And from one minute to the next, she was like, I'm the maverick moderate who will flip back and forth across the party line, and then like 10 seconds later was like, I'm a diehard, strong Trump conservative. Who are you targeting with that? If in the same breath that you're saying two different things, who are you trying to really lock in?
Right. And I don't think it helped when Trump did that, you know, that most recent appearance and brought her up and he was like, you get 1 minute, Martha, and don't waste my time. Like it really, yeah, to your point, it really didn't seem like there was a lot of support from the GOP there.
No, I mean, like, it's not like, let's be really clear. Trump and Martha McSally have never had the closest relationship, not by, you know, a million miles. She's tried to like bend into that, but there was so much pushback when she started trying to lean into Trump from the people who kind of financially bankrolled her early campaigns here about the fact she was going that direction, because that's not what they wanted. They wanted someone who's going to cut their taxes and not rock the boat on social issues. And they got exactly the opposite. And she was kind of open about the fact that she was worried about Trump coming in really heavy against her in a primary. And considering the fact that, you know, Joe Arpaio ran against her, Kelly Ward, these people that would have been clearly more Donald Trump adjacent were already running against her. You know, she got scared. The problem is, if you get that scared that you try to appeal to everyone, you know.
That never works.
Appeal to no one. Right. No.
When do you think we lost? I mean, because it used to be we had integrity in politics at one point. When do you feel the curve really happened where, I mean, there's always been a certain level of pandering, but it really does seem like people have really cashed out their morals as far as trying to rather than win based on their platform or their beliefs. You know, they seem very willing to just go with whatever is most popular at the moment.
I mean, how nerdy do you want me to get on that?
Pretty nerdy. Go all the way. Whatever.
I can give you like a very sincere answer, or I can give you a snarky answer. That both are kind of hinting at the same thing.
We'll take both.
Vietnam. It's just been a downward slope since then. Now, if you want to get really nerdy, so throughout U.S. history and like political science, it exists in a series of what we call party systems. And we sit in, depending on who you ask, the sixth or the seventh party system right now. I believe it's the seventh party system. And that kind of theory states that the two parties have realigned based more around these kind of really ingrained wedge issues than the things where there used to be some what's barter and trade on. It's really easy to barter and trade on tax rates and you know, who's going to fill the potholes and yada, 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 and you know, which country should be bombed. I hate to say that last one, but it's kind of true. Those are things that are like, yeah, you can find consensus, right? It's so much harder to agree on anything if your entire campaign has to be based around things where you are essentially having a completely different conversation than your opponent. If you guys are talking about the same issue, but you're talking about two different things, which is really what's happening right now, and the two completely different groups of people, you can't find a middle ground. And ultimately, also, you're going to wind up with a lot of politicians who maybe actually care about certain things that are not talking about those, because that's not what's going to win them the election, because they have to cobble together a base that, you know, let's say, for example, someone like Martha McSally, who would much rather cut taxes, right? Like, she's a fiscal conservative and kind of a military hawk. And those are the two things she really wants to care about. But that's not things that Republican base voters want to hear about. They want to talk about guns and they want to talk about the border and they want to talk about, you know, racial issues in a way that is very ugly and uncomfortable. So you might get someone like that who really wants to get in there either because they want the chance to wield power or because they've got something that they actually want to do something about. And instead of talking about those issues or trying to make something happen up front, what they're going to do instead is just kind of pander and lie to like the lowest common denominator, because that's how you get an enthusiastic, you know, mobilized campaign behind you to get you into office so that maybe you can cast that one vote on that one issue you really care about.
And Billy agrees with you, listener Billy. The NAM Vietnam answer goes along with the timeline and when Roger Ailes conspired with Nixon to get the GOP on television. We love a good conspiracy theory around here. Were you aware of that, Brian? I know you are a political science maven.
I'm all about the creation of Fox News and the efforts that it has taken on, the incredible, powerful hold that it has caused the GOP party to shift in terms of it. Alex, my question here is, how did you originally get into politics? Were you a politics kid? Were you 6 years old following Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anyone in that kind of like millennial demographic that wasn't a politics kid, because look at how things kind of like rolled out, right? Because like you're just getting aware of stuff and you're watching like the, how much am I allowed to swear on this thing before I keep going here?
Go do whatever you want.
Fucking A. Like, go for it.
You're watching the shit show of like the 2000 election unfold and then like boom, like the second you get back to like paying attention to like pop culture, it's 9/11, everything's crazy, and then it's Iraq, and you're like right in an age demographic where it's like, ooh, shit, like my friends are dying in that, and like, you know, depending on how this thing goes, like if they start drafting people, I might die in that. So I don't think there's anyone of a certain age that like wasn't super politically engaged at a young age, or at least wasn't paying attention. I think the problem was with my age demographic, right? You know, I remember around the time that Barack Obama was running that first time, that was the big talk, right? It was millennials are gonna save us. They're, you know, being so rational and they're so young, but they're so engaged and paying attention. And that was like not the case at all. You're just like so jaded from like that decade and the way it bookended with like 9/11 and the financial crisis, that it like, well, yeah, sure, we were a whole huge generation of kids that were super plugged in and paying attention, but not enough of us thought that anything could be done about it. And I feel like most people under 35 are just so apathetic about what the prospects for themselves and their life look like at this point that, you know.
And rightfully so. I mean, if I yeah. were, you know, if I was 25 or 30 these days, yeah, I would be very, you know, if I had spent, you know, $80,000-$100,000 on school to get out and not have an economy and not be able to work a regular job and buy a home, have health care, you know, the list goes on and on. I can certainly understand the apathy.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better. I can just tell you, it doesn't get better. No. Once you hit your mid to late 40s, you become really apathetic.
My thing is like where, you know, previous generations had been like hopeful for my generation. And like at the time, like on the ground, I was like, nah, we're going to show up for this one election and that's it. You know, like we'll apply pressure to the gunshot wound, but we're not even going to bother going to surgery for it. I do have a lot of faith in the generation beneath mine, because while they're just as engaged, if not more so than my generation was, they are nowhere near as cynical and angry about it. You know, my generation was just very misdirected in how we were approaching it. And without like I didn't meet anyone that was like involved in politics 12 years ago around my age, just like getting their like foothold in it, who was like, we can make a difference. They were like, maybe we can delay the bad. The younger kids are just like, right now are just popping off in like the most creative and amazing ways. And like, they really think that they can like get elected or elect people that'll listen to them and that they're like, they'll save the world and like more power to them. Like, and I think my role at this point, like I'm still a pretty young guy, but my role at this point is just like, let's stop the bleeding long enough for them to figure it out, because they're going to, and it's a triage system and it works well.
Yeah. I mean, you look at someone, I mean, you know, you had the TikTok kids that really screwed up Trump's first major rally there. You've got someone like, you know, Claudia Conway, who, you know, at 15 years old, you know, is very outspoken about, you know, her mother and her father. And it does give you a slight sense of hope that, you know, maybe we can slowly start to, you know, turn out of the skid before we crash completely into the wall.
Yeah. So no pressure, Gen Z.
Not at all. So Tuesday
turn 25 and keep us alive, please.
That's right. Tuesday night was obviously it was a roller coaster of a night. You know, we ended up going. We did a live show. It started at 10 o'clock Eastern time. Things were much different at that point than we had hoped or anticipated. You know, two things. What surprised you the most about election night, and what disappointed you the most about election night?
I don't know that anything actually surprised me. I mean, the map was just weird for so many reasons, right? And it remained as such. But I don't know that it was like, it was one of those election cycles, right, where nothing, I think, was capable of shocking. And I think I went into it with that mindset. The thing that disappointed me, now with that said, while I wasn't surprised by anything, you can still be disappointed by things. And I was definitely disappointed by the fact that, you know, we elected a dead guy. We elected a 25-year-old whose favorite vacation hotspot was, you know,
Hitler's vacation spot. Yes.
Yeah, it was Hitler's vacation spot, who's never had a job in his life other than apparently serially sexually assaulting his classmates. Yep. And we elected not one, but two people who, you know, believe that a pedophile ring controls the government. So, that's incredibly disappointing. I think it looks like we are about to have a new president in the White House. Of course, the Senate doesn't look like much is going to necessarily get done, that's the big fear, right? Is can Joe Biden figure out how to somehow pass a single policy with Mitch McConnell still there with a Republican majority? And, you know,
well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Biden is only, I think there's only about a 3,500 vote difference between Trump and Biden in Georgia right now. And I think that last count, there's about 19,000 votes to be counted. But what's interesting is, you know, we already knew that one of the Georgia Senate seats was going to a runoff. At this point, the second seat will go to a runoff as well, as Purdue has dropped to 49.9%. And with a lot of the votes expected to be Democratic that are counted, people anticipate that will hold, and we'll have a runoff for both Georgia Senate seats come January, I believe. So the amazing thing is even with kind of the disappointing night the Democrats had in the Senate, you know, if they can get both Georgia Senate seats, they would control the Senate.
It is in play. You know, it is in play. But I mean, if our hopes are on a runoff election in the Deep South, this is a dicey predicament to be in. Let's not get ourselves on that.
Right.
That doesn't mean it can't be done.
Right.
But yeah.
But we are talking about Georgia.
But would you have ever thought that Georgia, from a presidential election standpoint, would be this close?
I mean, I think that is inherently the thing that we're seeing, right? It is that these elections all over the place are getting very close. It was very close in the Rust Belt. It's very close in the Sun Belt. It's very close now in many states in the Deep South. There's a lot of different ways I think you could look at this, though. I think there's a lot of people from across the political spectrum saying it shouldn't have been this close. There's no way that this election cycle should have been this close. But there were a lot of people 4 years ago saying there's no way Donald Trump should have won either.
Right.
So the Democrats as a party have to tear up this playbook they're using. They really, really have to. And the truth is that this cycle wasn't really that different in terms of the playbook that was being used than everything from the 2002 midterms forward. And so that's, it's gotta change. And there's a lot of people putting different ideas out there. And I gotta be honest, every single take I've heard from, you know, the center left to the far left of the Democratic Party, I think it's like you hear things and you're like, you're so close, but you're not quite there. And that's how I felt kind of about everything. You know, people are sitting there saying like, well, Bernie would have won. Maybe not. Maybe he would have. Maybe not. You can't say that as a fact because you don't know. It didn't happen. It didn't happen twice. So you don't really know.
Alex, why do you think the polls were so far off for the second time around? You know, 4 years ago, Hillary was predicted to win by 13 points. She lost the entire election. This year, everybody was talking about the blue wave that was going to sweep the country. The Democrats were going to take control of the Senate. Here we are 3 days later, still biting our fingernails. Why do you think the polls are so off?
There's lots of reasons, and you can start trying to pick apart like specific methodologies from each poll. But if you want a broad reason that I think applies to everything, is that these last two election cycles, and I think this is going to be true of future election cycles in general, didn't fit the mold. You know, we're talking about Joe Biden has more votes than anyone who has ever ran for president ever. It's a record, right?
Right.
But Trump gained, and he expanded beyond his base, and he gained voters that, you know, based on the exit polling, He gained in areas that used to be strongly Democratic, and even in the last cycle went for the Democrats and by bigger numbers, and he made gains there. He made gains on kind of a lot of different demographics that the Democrats are really, really tend to base their strategy off of, the idea that these groups will overwhelmingly turn out for them. So there's got to be a huge pivot. I think that both parties are probably going to have kind of a come to Jesus moment on how they're approaching elections. That could be really, really good for the country. It just as likely could be really, really toxic and really, really bad. And I think it's going to, in some ways, maybe come from the bottom up. If we can have more and more local candidates and start seeing backbenches built that are running civil, relatively clean, but idea-focused campaigns and are trying to target broad swaths of voters because they're realizing that what they think might show up, to support them, what voters might, show up in a given election cycle is just not predictable anymore and is wrong, then they might have to start trying to just talk to everyone. Maybe the more we talk to everyone and each other, the less toxic this gets. Mm-hmm. So that's my hope.
Well, definitely, it feels, since Trump really came into power, it definitely feels that the politicians that are running seem to be going out of their way to advertise that they are going to be there to represent their base and not to represent the citizens of whatever district or state or country, in this case, they're voting to represent.
Yeah.
It feels like they are narrowing to say, I will absolutely represent the people who are going to vote for me, and I will absolutely shun those who have different views than I, rather than saying, I'm going to make sure that I represent this district to the best of my capabilities.
And, I mean, that's not an entirely new phenomena. But, that old Tip O'Neill quote that everyone loves to beat to death, all politics is local. I'm not really sure that's ever been true, but that is certainly less true now than it has been in a long time, because a lot of the problems that are facing people, be they economic or environmental or in regards to the criminal justice system, do not have local solutions. They don't. And the things that are bothering people in their day-to-day life, your mayor can't fix. And, he or she may be the brunt of local anger sometimes, whether it's policing, whether it is about climate issues, yada, yada. But their literal power to do so is very, very small, because the problems are so large. And so when you're running for something like Congress or Senate, when you're talking about a big national issue, you are talking about what's going on in that district, because that's what's happening in almost every district in America. And that is the truth. I think the one thing I have found from organizing and in a red state for so many years is that there is common ground you can find with people who have kind of tribally identified themselves with a certain political position or political party that is an opposite of you. If you scale all the way back and think about what they're really talking about, I like to use guns because I'm in Arizona and that's a common talking point out here, right? But when you get two people approaching the gun conversation, what they normally do is they start yelling at each other about the policies that they do or don't want to see enacted. And most of the time, both of them have no idea what they're talking about. But if you scale back from what they're actually saying, the things that they're really worried about aren't, a physical gun. They're concerned about freedom. On the one side, freedom to own a gun, freedom to, be alive and safe in public. But they are worried about freedom. They are worried about safety. And those are the universal themes. And so if you are trying to convince someone of a political position, the idea should never be, I'm going to yell at you till you agree with me. It should be, where are you coming from at on this? And then how do I make you understand that the best way to achieve what you want is this policy I'm advocating for? You want to be safer, so you feel like you need a gun, but here's a way to be safer and maybe still keep it with some restrictions. Right. and that's gotta be how it I think works if you want to start winning more and more of these districts. But the issues are too big to be hyper localized and say, well, I'm just here for Arizona second, and I'm going to look out for the folks of Arizona second, because the truth is, by what you're doing that matters, that really matters to them, matters in Georgia's second too, and Florida's first, and New York's fifth. And the issues are so large, but so universal at the moment, in a way that maybe they haven't been since like the 40s.
Well, and hopefully one of the results of this election is maybe people can start talking to each other once again. Well, one last question before we let you go here, and we're going to throw it back to Billy, possibly the most important question of the night. Alex, how did you get John Cena and Alyssa Milano to follow you on Twitter?
I was in the right place at the right time.
Right.
You know, it's like asking someone how you win the lotto, right? You buy a lot of lotto tickets, and, you know, you get lucky. I was in the right seat at the right city council meeting at the right time that the worst person in Arizona showed up in my neck of Arizona. And if you flip on the news, you can see that she's been, you know, harassing vote counters all night. Yeah. So someone else will get famous off of her tomorrow.
anything to plug before we get you out of here?
Man, shit might get really weird in the next 2 weeks. Try to take a break. I don't have anything directly to plug other than just maybe a mindset, but just try to take a break, drink some water, and try not to do anything that's going to get you or someone else killed. So,
some general good advice right there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we definitely appreciate you joining us. Thank you. Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you, sir.
Hopefully we can have
Thanks
you back.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, good
stuff. I like that guy.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, I'm back.
It's good to see, you know, I look at him as like a very good person because I don't get involved yes. enough. And here's a guy that's like, I'm getting involved in everything.
I He's also
getting involved for everything for both you and I.
I misjudged his age. I thought he was in his 40s.
No, he's in his late 20s.
I had no idea.
It's the mustache. It makes you look older at times.
All right. Very good. That was interesting. Yeah, I think it's interesting to get somebody else's perspective on things you and I talk about regularly, especially people who are not in the Northeast.
Right.
Like, I think you and I have a very similar sensibility. So I think it's very interesting to hear somebody, you know, we just spent a half an hour talking to somebody from Arizona who's living a very different life than we are.
Well, and here's a guy, again, I mean, Arizona may be a blue state after, you know, the tonight or tomorrow. But, you know, here's a guy that's been in a red state, a deep red state, and just really fighting the good fight and an uphill battle where mm-hmm. a lot of people, definitely you or I, probably would have quit a long time ago.
Absolutely.
All right, Brian.
I'm thinking about quitting right now.
A question thrown out to you. You were going to come up with a bit of a lightning round for me this week. Did you come up with anything?
I've got a lightning round.
All right. What do you got for me?
All right, Ron. This past week, we have done the nation, not just you, not just I. We have done a lot of talk about states.
Yes.
American states. What is going on? Different differences between them. Blue, red, racist, not racist, pro-drug, anti-drug, whatnot. I thought that it would be a great lightning round for you to pick states.
All right. All right. So I'm going to, or you got something, to throw at me.
I'm going to read to you two states.
Okay.
You will have to pick one and then tell me why.
So let's say I'm getting ready to travel somewhere for the weekend and you're like, here are two states you can go to and you can only pick one and why.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's go with it.
Alabama or Georgia?
I mean, I've been to both. I've been to Birmingham.
You know, they call this a lightning round.
I'm going to go Georgia just because Atlanta is there, and it's a great city.
Okay, now, have you been outside of the airport or just...
I've been in Atlanta. There's a great little fondue place in downtown Atlanta, little Dante's Inferno. You got the Coca-Cola place there you can go and tour. Yeah.
The Falcons blew a 28-3 lead.
And that they did. But yeah, you got the sports. I mean, there's a lot there in Georgia.
All right, New Hampshire.
There's another one. Sorry. My apologies. I interrupted you.
New Hampshire or Maine?
That's a good one. That is a very good one. I would probably just go Maine for no reason whatsoever.
No reason.
I mean, I don't really know anything in New Hampshire. I've heard of stuff in Maine.
Okay. Washington or Oregon?
Washington State, you're referring to?
Yes.
I'd probably go Washington because I've been to Oregon already. I've been to Portland. So yeah, let's go Washington.
When were you in Portland? This past summer? Are you part of Antifa?
Years ago, I was in Portland.
Do we want to talk about why? It's just like, I know that when you hold back details, it's for a reason. Yeah,
I took a trip with my girlfriend at the time out to Portland.
Why would you pick Portland, Oregon? Because I'll be honest with you, up until this past summer, Portland, Oregon was a town that was never on my radar under any circumstances.
The exact reason for the trip, I'm not willing to disclose in this form, but possibly after dark if people join the patron.
Then I have two words for our listeners right now. Join the Patreon if you're not already there. For you, Ron, pour yourself another beer.
Thank you. What other states do we have, or was that it?
South Dakota, North Dakota.
Wow, that is like the Sophie's choice of suck. Let's go North Dakota.
Any reason?
None whatsoever.
South Florida or Panhandle Florida?
I don't know the difference between the two, but I would probably go South Florida. Panhandle
Florida, white trash. South Florida,
seems very rednecky to me.
Cubans, old people, and nightclubs.
All right.
What was your answer?
I said South Florida.
Okay. Avocado oil or grapeseed oil?
Got to go with the avocado oil. I just threw some avocado oil on some potatoes I roasted the other night. Delicious.
Okay. 51% or 49%?
Always got to go 51%.
Really? Interesting. Really? Backstreet Boys or NSYNC?
Come on, Backstreet Boys.
West Virginia or Kentucky?
West Virginia.
Really?
Yeah.
Last but not least, Jews or Muslims?
Both, Brian. I love everybody.
Poor shit. You got to pick one.
I will go Muslims then.
Oh. Well, apparently. Jews
are doing super spreader events in New York, and I can't abide by that.
Fuck, that's great logic. I can't even come down on you for that.
Nope, not at all. We also, quick Dancing with the Stars update. We had made these wagers a while back, and they were fairly equal with the exception of who we felt the final three were going to be. One of my final three, Vernon Davis, was already eliminated. Now, my second final three candidate, Jeannie Mai, had to leave the show due to a health issue. So now I think as long as either Nev or Machado make it to the final three, you win this wager.
I don't win any wagers.
I know.
Oh, I win nothing.
We forgot completely, Brian, and our people are hanging on for this because this is how they're going to pay their rent. NFL Locks of the Week. Again, congratulations, Brian. A 2-0 week this past week. You looked at the Green Bay Packers favored by 6.5. You're like, you know what the Vikings are due. And sure enough,
score.
Vikings win 28-22. Chargers favored by 3 over kind of an anemic Denver team. But you're like, you know what? I also think Denver is going to step up to the challenge. They did. They win it by a point, 31-30. You go perfect again on the season. Congratulations.
I would like to take credit. But I felt those were obvious picks. You, on the other hand, my friend.
Ooh.
Wow. The Tennessee Titans, 5.5 against the anemic, not even anemic, near death. Their chances of victory in Cincinnati are similar to Trump's winning Pennsylvania. And you know what? You were like, give me those odds. I like them. Give me the Bengals. They win 31-20. Don't even need the 5.5 points.
No, I don't want them.
Then You look down to Miami and you saw them getting 3.5 against the LA Rams. And you said, oh, wait a second. Are they starting their star running back or quarterback, Tui Musasopo?
I said, yes. It was Tua time.
Dolphins 28-17. You, my friend, for the 8th consecutive week went 2-0. You are now 16-0 this season. I'm How blessed. Do you do it? How do you keep doing it?
Hashtag blessed. That's all I can say.
What do you got this week, Ron?
So this week, again, you know, I hate to bet on Tom Brady, but I can't avoid it this week. Tampa Bay is favored by 4.5 over the Saints, so I'm taking Tampa Bay minus the points. And then Pittsburgh is going into Dallas with just – I don't even know who plays in Dallas anymore. But Pittsburgh favored by 2 touchdowns, big number on the road, and I think Pittsburgh covers it and more. Take the Steelers minus the 14. Brian, who you got this week?
I'm going Cardinals minus 4.5 over the Dolphins. I think they won last week. Not going to get used to it. And then I'm riding my anti-Jets wave again, going with the Patriots. As bad as they are seeming this season, they get it back on track. Laying 7 points, take New England.
Love it. Love it. Well, again, as always, you know, bet with your head, not over it. Call 1-800-GAMBLER if you have a problem. In the meantime, let's talk about some of the celebrities that left us this week. Kids Are All Right actor Eddie Hassel shot dead at 30. Loved him on Leave It to Beaver. Just a classic role. He was always complimenting Mrs. Cleaver. Brian, do you remember that? Do you remember watching Eddie Hassel on Leave It to Beaver?
He was all of us.
Although it seems all 30 and on this show that was on. So maybe I'm getting this wrong. Oh, that would be Eddie 80. Haskell. Eddie Haskell.
You're thinking 80.
So Eddie Haskell, apparently best known for his roles in NBC's Surface and the Oscar nominated flick, The Kids Are All Right. Shot dead in Texas early Sunday, during a suspected carjacking.
Irrelevant.
Is The Kids Are All Right? I'd never heard of this movie.
A movie, apparently.
It was Oscar nominated. For what?
I don't know. We'll have to see if we can watch it.
Do we have to?
No, not at all. Nikki McKibben, former American Idol contestant, season 1, answer to a trivia question. We all know that Kelly Clarkson and Justin Guarini came in first and second. Nikki McKibben came in 3rd in the first season of American Idol. She unfortunately has passed away at the age of 42, apparently due to a brain aneurysm.
Is that code for drugs?
I would hope not. She did have some addiction issues. She had some demons that she battled, but she was clean, had a husband and a child. So our thoughts go out to them, obviously. But what would arguably be the biggest loss of the week, Sir Sean Connery, the James Bond actor, passing away at the age of 90. We've got a photo here of him, of one of his many appearances.
That was at his prime. That was at his prime. Look at that. So handsome.
Acting career spanned 7 decades, winning an Oscar in 1988 for his role in the movie The Untouchables.
He deserved that one. That was a great role.
But you look at his list of credits, it's a list of great movie after great movie: Hunt for Red October, Highlander, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, The Rock, and then obviously the James Bond movies that he was in.
He also made a lot of stinkers, let's be honest.
No, there were some bad movies. And
can we talk about The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Yeah, that wasn't, you know, that had so much promise and yet not that good.
I made it about 5 minutes into that movie and turned it off.
He also apparently advocated hitting women at one point, which is not cool. Again, you grew up in the era, but not cool.
It was the 60s. It was okay to hit people back in the 60s.
Okay, was it?
Well, this was the thing. If you read the quote that he had in Playboy, he advocated hitting people. He thought it was perfectly fine if you got into a disagreement with a man that eventually would come to
fisticuffs. To blows.
what he basically said in the interview in Playboy was, you know, there are times where women are just as antagonizing and are as upsetting, and sometimes you have to hit them too. What really got bad on his part was when Barbara Walters on 2020, 20 years later in the mid-80s, gave him an opportunity to walk away from that comment, to basically say, you know what, I was wrong on that. It's never okay to hit a woman. And Sean, being the baller that he is, sat there and was like, yeah, absolutely, it's okay. Obviously, he never met, Barbara Walters never met my first wife.
So, apparently suffering from dementia at the end of his life. So clearly the last few years of his life, not that great. Oh, another, here's another stinker.
He didn't know about it.
Mentions Finding Forrester. Oh, that was a horrible Sean Connery movie.
You know, it was a good one, even though it was kind of bad. The Rock.
Yeah, no, The Rock. Well, it was so bad, it's good. You know, that
yes.
was,
oh,
that
no.
was Nicolas Cage, yes. Ed Harris.
Peak Nicolas Cage. It was peak Nicolas Cage.
Peak Cage.
Welcome to The Rock.
He said, Nicolas Cage said, I am going to steal the Declaration of Independence from The Rock.
Yes.
Love that movie. Love that movie.
However, I will say Sean Connery was Hunt for Red October, one of my all-time top 10.
Solid. Godspeed, Sir Sean Connery.
Careful what you shoot at. Some things in here don't react so well to bullets.
one thing I forgot to mention on Tuesday night, and I felt very remiss afterwards, is I wanted to compliment somebody on election night. And that individual was America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani. Because here's why. We know that Rudy Giuliani loved three things. He loves cousins, he loves young women, and he loves October surprises.
And he also, hold on if I may interrupt, he also hates when his shirt is untucked.
Right. But
can't stand it.
His October surprise was completely on point because as of, and I just refreshed the totals to make sure, as of this moment, Hunter Biden has not received a single vote for president in the United States. So Rudy Giuliani, mission accomplished.
Fuck Rudy Giuliani. I used to actually like that guy.
I know. Everybody did. He was America's mayor.
He was America's mayor.
More loved in this country after 9/11. Than Rudy Giuliani.
And now Michael Cohen is America's lawyer.
There you go. Just real quick before we get out of here, let's look at some quick update accounts. Nevada, I don't know what they're doing. They're not updating. They say they won't update till tomorrow. But Biden has a 12,000 vote lead there with 89% of the vote in.
Count the votes.
Arizona is sitting there. The gap has narrowed definitely in Arizona. Biden's lead is down to 46,000 in Arizona with 90% of the count.
Count the votes.
North Carolina, I think it's probably just a matter of time before they call North Carolina for Trump. He is up with...
Stop the count.
He is up
Stop
with...
Stop the count.
...with 95%. Georgia, again, in a shocker. Right now, 2,500 votes separate... Trump
Stop the count.
With 99%
Stop the count.
Of the count. But the biggest one and the one that people feel is going to put Joe Biden over the top is the state of Pennsylvania. The lead has now been narrowed to 50,000 votes with 94% of the votes counted. Allegheny County, which is the Pittsburgh area, has already stated that they will not have any additional totals until tomorrow. The remaining ballots are basically Philadelphia and the surrounding counties. They are heavily Democratic ballots. So the anticipation is once all of those votes are counted, Joe Biden will win Pennsylvania.
Stop the count in Pennsylvania.
1,000 votes. So those 20 electoral votes, you know, taking Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, Georgia out of the mix, just those 20 votes from Pennsylvania would put Joe Biden at 273 votes and give him the presidency.
We're going to sue. We're going to go to courts. This is fraud.
We're going to sue everybody in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to sue everybody in the state of Michigan.
In a world.
All right. What else do you got this week, my friend? Oh, what are you watching real quick? What are you watching?
Much like the rest of this country, Ron, I'm watching the election coverage. It's the only thing to watch this week.
Well, there is a delightful new show on Netflix.
Delightful.
Called The Queen's Gambit, about a young girl who is a chess. Yeah, there we go. I just went Sean Connery. She is a chess prodigy. So, I highly recommend it.
What is it about? Because it looked like a teenage show, and I skipped right over it.
It is most definitely not a teenage show. It's actually a bit dark. I'm not going to lie. So it's basically about this girl. She is an orphan. She is adopted by this couple. Shortly after she is adopted, the husband takes off, so it's just her and the adopted mother. She's a chess prodigy, so she goes around just winning chess tournaments and becoming like globally known and making money and whatnot. So it gets darker, and I'm really synopsizing it, which is not a word, but I'm going to use it.
I like it.
Also, I would want to recommend the second season of David Letterman's interview show. My next guest needs no introduction. Although really? I did skip his interviews with Kim Kardashian and Kanye West.
Why?
Do recommend.
Are you racist?
They just don't interest me. But I will say this.
But don't you think that's why Letterman has them on? Because
I probably will at some point watch them. But hands down, I would argue that there is no better interviewer right now than David Letterman, because all these interviews are compelling. I did watch.
Stop yourself right now, Ron. Okay. Because I just sat there quietly for half an hour watching you do a compelling interview of Alex Kack. And I'm going to tell you something. I sat there watching, fixated to your every word, the way you bobbed and weaved the interview. You strung it in directions I didn't see coming. You are the most compelling interview around today.
But apart from that, watch David Letterman's interviews with both Dave Chappelle and Lizzo.
What does Lizzo have to offer?
A surprisingly positive message. And she is surprisingly talented. She is one of those people that, I'm not that familiar with her music, but you have a completely different perspective on her after watching this interview.
Does she have a WAP?
Possibly. I don't think that was her song, but possibly. Oh, just real quick about that Kids Are All Right movie. Apparently, Mark Ruffalo rails Julianne Moore, so I'm in. I'm ready to watch.
I'm down now, because if there's anything I like more than watching Mark Ruffalo rail somebody, it's watching Julianne Moore get railed. I've had a thing for her since, what's the Donnie Wahlberg movie?
Oh, Boogie Nights?
There you go.
Yeah. Have you watched that Mark Ruffalo show? It's either on Prime or HBO. This much I know is true.
No, Ron, I have a job, so therefore I'm not sitting at home all day just flipping through streaming services.
Incredibly, based on a true novel, incredibly well-acted, but just such an amazingly depressing story.
Is this the one about the blind kid?
No, this is the one about the twins, and one of them is schizophrenic.
You talked about that a week ago.
Did we? I don't think we did.
I'm pretty sure you mentioned that to me.
All right, maybe. Well, maybe you and I talked about it, but I don't know that we talked about it on here. Some fries for the table.
No, you have to do this motion for the table. You can't do for the table. It's for the table.
All right. Clearly, I'm buzzed. Clearly, it's a perfect time for After Dark because I am buzzed. Remember, After Dark exclusively for our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or higher. You can watch it live. $5, you get to catch it afterwards. But if you go to ronandbrianpodcast.com right now, in that upper right-hand corner, you're going to see a button that says Become a Patron. You join right now, and we will make sure that you get a link prior to 9:30 when we go live After Dark.
And oh, Billy, that link was sent out today.
Apparently, it's been discussed on the podcast. So it was that good that I'm discussing it again, but it was
I was right.
You're right.
I was right on something. What?
Anything else this week, Brian, for the good of the cause? Or are you ready?
I think I'm good. Patreon? I am ready to pour myself another glass of Macallan.
Nice.
By the way, I'm definitely going to get sloppy.
All right. Sloppy and sassy. That's how we like it after dark. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. If you have not yet, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Don't just click the stars. Leave us a written review. We'd love to hear your comments. Otherwise, we will catch you next week. If you're our Patreon folks. Yes, Brian.
I wanted to mention one other thing for people who have not signed up for the Patreon who are watching now. One of the things that we like to do is on the final Thursday of every month, something that Ron and I like to call the After Dark Pajama Party.
It's a pajama jammy jam.
We did it last week. It was our best one yet. Do you agree with that assessment?
I would agree with that 110%.
What we do is we send out the link to the StreamYard, the Zoom, the whatchamacallit, the Microsoft team, whatever the little technologies we're using. And our Patreon subscribers are able to come on the show with us. And it's like we're all sitting in a room gabbing like little schoolgirls after we had our first period. It is just, and I mean that in the school sense.
Yes, yes.
But it is always a fun time.
All right. Well, then let's get on out of here and let's get ready for After Dark. Thank you for joining us, everybody.